Thank you very much. First of all, it is not a continuation of the previous talk. Just a coincidence that I used the very same style of LaTeX slides. So I will talk about a completely different topic, bifurcation of periodic differential equations with delay. So as you know very well, in different areas, if one wants to build up mathematical models with differential equations, periodic effects and delayed effects must be taken into account. I just mentioned some of these fields, and in the talk I will slightly touch some of them. So in population dynamics, climate models, economy, and so on, for good models one has to consider periodic effects and delayed feedback also. So the equation under study is this one. This is just a scalar equation. When gamma is a real parameter, A is a coefficient, so we have an immediate feedback linear with a linear periodic coefficient, and we have a delayed feedback, which is a non-linear term, then the periodicity is inside. So A is a periodic function with period 1, and F is periodic in time also with period 1. The delay set to be 1 also, so the period and the delay is the same, and we suppose that 0 is an equilibrium, and we require smoothness for the delayed feedback term F. So, and gamma is our parameter. We will vary the parameter and we will study the bifurcation. So, we will see another version of this without this immediate feedback term. So then the equation reduces to the simpler one. First glance, one may say that this is just a special case of the previous one, but it's not the case. It has different phenomena appears. So we will see. So, just a brief outline. So the purpose is to study the time dynamics close to the equilibrium as we vary that real parameter gamma. So I let the equation also on the blackboard just to keep in mind. So we will increase the parameter gamma and we will see what happens close to the equilibrium. So the classical bifurcation theory studied two-dimensional systems, mainly, or low-dimensional. The roots goes back to Poincaré. So for the higher dimensional systems, we use different kind of projection methods because the essential part at the bifurcation or the essential part of the dynamics takes place always on some lower dimensional manifold. So the problem is that the delay differential equations, they are formulated in a Banach space of continuous functions. It's an infinite dimensional phase space. So that makes the computation for a finite dimensional manifold seems to be complicated if you're in infinite dimensional phase space. So, and even it is well known that even in the case of a scalar equation, if you have a time delay, then very complicated behavior is possible. As a well-known example is the Mackey-Glass equation, which, just to show you some examples, two solutions, we start with a constant initial function very close to each other, and you can see the complicated behavior. So for many PDEs, the dynamical system corresponding to the PDE formulated in a Hilbert space. It's also an infinite dimensional, but in the Hilbert space we have inner product. That is a tool to use projection, to project the things into a finite dimensional subspace, for example. But in our case, it's only a Banach space, so we don't have inner product. So for autonomous DDEs, DDE means delay differential equations, there are the so-called Hale bilinear forms are used to study bifurcations. But they apply only to autonomous case. We are in a non-autonomous case and a periodic one. So for periodic delay differential equations, there is a Faria built up a normal form theory, but that works even only with autonomous linear part. In our case, the linear part is also periodic. So we use another approach, a functional analytic approach. This is called the spectral projection. So the main result is that using this spectral projection method, we can go through the complete bifurcation analysis for Y class of periodic equations. And every result we give is explicit. So the main object under study is the so-called, so the phase space is as usual, the space of continuous functions on the initial interval with the supremum norm. And the main object is the so-called, so here we every initial function defines a solution. And the main object is the so-called time one map or period map, which is defined by these relations. Here the sub t is not the partial derivative, it's defined by this, the segment of the solution. So you can see in the next figure. So we have an initial function phi that defines a unique solution. So this white curve defines a unique solution, green one. So we take the segment of the solution from the interval 0, 1, translate back into the initial interval, and that is the definition of the time one map. So for an initial function mapped into the segment of the solution after one unit interval. So that is the time one map for an initial function, this function. So after that we will deal with maps. So now instead of a continuous flow, we will deal with the maps, and we build up the bifurcation of maps with this period map. So the monodromy operator, so we linearize, this is the derivative with respect to the second variable. So we linearize the equation, and this is the so-called linear variational equation, and the monodromy operator is the derivative of the time one map at the equilibrium zero, anyway just the same as the corresponding period map to the linearized equation. So it's if we have initial function on the initial interval, from the next unit interval is just a simple ODE if we already know what is in the delay term. So we can express explicitly the time one map and the monodromy operator. Okay, it is easy to show that the monodromy operator is compact, or in other words, completely continuous operator. That means that the non-zero points of the spectrum are so countable, and the only possible accumulation point is zero, and they have finite multiplicity. So there is a Floch theorem for delay differential equations, which state that if we have a Floch multiplier, so sigma is the spectrum of the monodromy operator, we call this mu a Floch multiplier, and the lambda on the exponent is Floch exponent. So if we have a Floch multiplier, then we have a solution of this form, where pt is the periodic function, and lambda is the corresponding Floch exponent. So using this Floch theorem, we can deduce a characteristic equation. Here alpha and beta are the integrals of the terms of from the linearized equation. So we arrive, if we have an equation, we arrive at the characteristic equation, and we also can give the corresponding eigenfunctions for every Floch multiplier, which is an eigenvalue of the monodromy operator. We have. Okay, on the next, so we studied the characteristic equation. I go back a bit. So studying the characteristic equation, we can determine that how many of the Floch multipliers, which are the eigenvalues of the linearized time one map, the monodromy operator, so how many of them is outside the complex unit circle. These numbers denote that one. So in this plane, this u, here you see it refers, alpha comes from the integral of the immediate feedback, beta comes from the integral of the linear part of the delayed feedback. So if we have a given equation that gives us in this plane a point, we have a given alpha, given beta, we start with some certain value of gamma, that gives us a point like this one, for example. If we increase the parameter gamma, that means that in this plane we are moving on lines, like in the green lines. So if we are here and we increase gamma, that we are moving that way. So if we consider the regions, so this is the plane divided by regions, divided into regions by the white curves and this white line. So just look at only the white things. So in every region there is a number that denotes how many, if we are in such a region, how many Floch multipliers are outside the unit circle. So for example, if we zero, that is the region of asymptotic stability of the equilibrium. So if we are in here in region number 1, then we have only exactly one flow k multiplied outside the unit circle. Clearly, if we have eigenvalue greater than outside the unit circle, then we have instability for the equilibrium. So if we start from a point, increase the parameter, and if we cross this white curve here at this point, that means here we have one flow k multipliers outside the unit circle, here we have three. That means a complex conjugated pairs of flow k multipliers cross the unit circle. So that is a bifurcation point. So our task is to detect these points. So let me give you just a general impression of Neimark-Sucker bifurcation, the bifurcation of maps on plane called Neimark-Sucker bifurcation. It is similar, analogous to the Hopf bifurcation, but not exactly the same. So now consider just a general map of the plane depending on one parameter. So mu are the corresponding multipliers, the eigenvalues of the Jacobian, so depending on the parameter gamma. So they are in conjugated pairs. So here it is a conjugated pair. So if we vary the gamma increase, for example, then it may happen that this conjugated pair of multipliers cross the unit circle on the complex plane. So, and if we require two additional conditions, one is a so-called transversality condition or Hopf condition. That means that we really cross the unit circle, not just touch. And the other is the non-resonance condition. It will have a big importance in the talk later. So we require this additional condition. And in that case, if they are satisfied, we have a so-called Neimark-Sucker bifurcation, which says that, so suppose that we have this situation, that the pair of multipliers cross the unit circle, and the Neimark-Sucker bifurcation theorem states that in this case, there is an invariant circle appears on the plane. Now we have the map on the plane. So from the equilibrium zero, an invariant circle arises. That means that we are dealing with a map, not the continuous flow. So there is a circle on the plane, which is invariant with respect to the map. So it's not a periodic orbit like in Hopf. Not necessarily. Absence of the strong resonance, yes. It doesn't affect. So I will talk about the resonances. A special chapter of the talk later. So the condition is only not to have strong resonance. So this is the way I used to imagine bifurcation, anyway, all the bifurcation phenomena. So we can, this is just a small interval of the parameter. Here is the critical value. This is the, and so in general, we can. So in general, the nonlinearity, so we have the linear part, nonlinear part, and the linear nonlinear part has the same kind of nature in this small interval of the gamma in the general case. But the linear part changes. For example, if we have the flow k multipliers moves from inside to outside unit circle, that means before the critical value. So suppose, for example, that the nonlinearity forces the solutions into the direction of the equilibrium. So if we have inside the flow k multipliers before the critical value, then the linear part also forces to that direction. But after, if the flow k multipliers when cross the unit circle, they are outside and they force it away the solution. So that means in this interval of the parameter, we have two forces. One, the linear part forces away, the nonlinear part forces into the equilibrium. So that means if we are close to the zero, then the linear part dominates. If we go further, then the nonlinear part. So one can imagine that there is some kind of equilibrium of power, so how to say. So there is an invariant structure occurs that represents an invariant curve on the space space. So in that case, the bifurcated invariant curve has stability. You can see from this side, it's stable. This is called supercritical bifurcation. And the other case, if we have the nonlinearity, acts just like the opposite. And flow k multipliers moves from inside to outside unit circle, then we have an invariant structure before the critical value, and this is unstable. So that is subcritical bifurcation. So we will use a very important theorem, which is a which states the existence of a smooth center manifold theorem. So the center manifold theory goes back to the 60s by the works of Plissé and Kelly. It was established in different settings, in autonomous, in continuous, for flows, or for maps in Banach spaces. But so maybe it's a bit surprising that the smooth existence of smooth center manifold for a map in a Banach space is just a quite new result, comparing with the other center manifold theorem. It was done by Faria, Huang, and Zhang Hongwu. So I don't state the full theorem here because it was in another context. I just the consequence which applies for our case, that if we have the time one map is smooth enough, and we have a Flocke multiplier on the unit circle, so in that critical case, then we have a smooth center manifold. So for to study bifurcation, we need smoothness. So another important tool is the so-called Ries-Schauder theorem, a theorem from functional analysis. And at this point, please let me make a historical comment, because this Ries, so many of the fundamental theorems of functional analysis are devoted to Ries, Frederick Ries, and he was the founder of the Mathematical Institute of the University of Szeged in Hungary, where I graduated. So, but let's see the theorem itself. So if you have in a simplified way, I state it. So we have a compact operator, the monodromy operator, with a simple eigenvalue. Then we have a decomposition of the phase space with these properties. So one, we have an eigenspace corresponding to this eigenvalue, and another Q corresponding to the other part of the spectrum. Furthermore, a spectral projection P mu onto this eigenspace can be represented by Ries, so-called Ries Danforth integral, which is just the same as the residuum of the resolvent of the monodromy operator. So if we want some projection, then the task is given. We have to compute the resolvent and then compute the residuum of the resolvent. So and if since we have a representation for the monodromy operator, this can be calculated as in the next theorem state. So now please don't care about the formula. It's not important, the special form of the formula. What is important is that for the resolvent we have an explicit formula. So that is the important part, that from the equation we can compute this explicitly. So if we can compute straightforwardly the residuum, and by this we find the following with simple formula for the spectral projection operator. Q mu is the corresponding eigenfunction for a mu. So this formula, we can compute the projection of every element of the phase space onto an eigenspace. Okay, just let me say some words about how the so-called projection method works. So we have a map on a space, and we split the dynamics into two parts. One corresponds to the center subspace, and the other corresponds to the stable unstable subspace. These are the linear parts on the on the center and stable unstable subspace. So if we split it into this form, our map, and for the center manifold, we can derive this equation, and by this we can compute the coefficients of the Taylor series of the center manifold step by step. This can be computed. So in R, this is the general way of projection methods. So in our case, we will use Z is the strictly nonlinear part. We will use this R, which comes from this projection operator. So for any element of the phase space can be decomposed by this way. This is the sum of these two. This is the eigenfunction and the conjugate. So this the sum of these two is the real function. So that will be the projection to the center subspace. So and we will use, but with this, we will use, this is a two-dimensional, the center subspace is two-dimensional. I didn't say, but it can be always proved that the critical eigenvalue is always single eigenvalue. So that the center manifold is always two-dimensional in a critical case. And we will use on this two-dimensional center So in this two-dimensional part, we will use the complex number z as a coordinate. So using this decomposition, write it into this equation. This is the so-called restricted equation. Next time, everything in a Taylor series, and we can start the long computation of bifurcation analysis. From this point, it's standard. So, and we arrive to the bifurcation result. So the Neumann-Fackel bifurcation theorem for this equation. So suppose we have this, the time one map also depends on the parameter gamma. If we emphasize this, I write this sub gamma here. So suppose that some critical value we have fixed point zero with Fokker multipliers on the unit circle, and the non-resonance condition, Hopf conditions are satisfied. So then this formula gives the critical multipliers, and this the critical parameter values. This can be derived relatively easily from the characteristic equation. So what is remain? The nature of the bifurcation is subcritical or supercritical. So and we can conclude by lengthy computation that this is determined by the sign of this coefficient. Here v and w are the higher order derivatives of the time one map at zero. This is the resolvent. So this can be computed also. Again, what is important that this is, so for any specific case, it's very lengthy to compute the sign of these coefficients, but the important thing, again, it's explicit. So if you give given an equation, one can compute this explicitly. So and the sign of this determines that it's a supercritical or subcritical bifurcation. So let's see some applications of this. For example, if we are in, consider this equation, this autonomous equation without the RT, so we consider with the periodic coefficient. Oh, it's a relatively simple case of periodic equations. And if we assume that the second derivative is zero at zero and the third is not, this condition is satisfied by many functions used for G. For example, tangent hyperbolic or arcus tangent functions are used in different kind of models, so they satisfy this, for example. So in that case, we can compute that only the sign of the third derivative determines the direction of the bifurcation. Similar result, a bit more complicated, if we have now the linearity in the delay feedback is inside, and we assume furthermore these conditions, then again, third derivative determines the direction of the bifurcation. So the previous two theorems include such many examples, like one version of the Mackey-Glass equation, if we introduce here periodic coefficients. So this yellow T, without the yellow things, this is the classic Mackey-Glass equation. Or another widely known equation, here the capitals refers to Tibor Christine, Hans-Otto Walter, and Jean-Hong Wu. They studied this equation without the periodicity. So another application is the Nicholson-Blow-Flies equation. This comes from a population dynamics. Again, I would take this with periodic coefficients, and I can deduce that for certain critical values, we have supercritical bifurcation here from the positive steady state. I just translate it to zero. Okay, so there are dozens of papers considering Nicholson's blow-fly equations without telling the reader what is the Nicholson's blow-fly. So I made some investigation, and I will show you the results. So Nicholson's blow-fly is this. So just to know what the Nicholson-Blow-Flies equation is about. So now let's turn to the resonant case. So we don't have this term A of T, only the equation. One may think that it's even simpler. So in some sense it's simpler, because then the characteristic equation reduces to this one, eigenfunctions are simpler, critical values are simpler. But we can compute that in this case, the critical Floquet multiplier is always the imaginary unit. That means it is a 1-4 strong resonance, and the Neumann-Fackel theorem is not valid. So, and if we do all the computations that I didn't show you, then it turns out that we have to deal with such terms during the computations. So clearly, if mu is the imaginary unit, then we have to divide by zero. It's not possible. But one can think that this is the reason we cannot do the bifurcation theorem. But this is not the reason, not only the reason, because Arnold showed that in the resonance, strong resonance, in absence, in the presence of strong resonance, it is also possible that there is no invariant curve at all. So the dynamics can be completely different. So not only we cannot do the computations, but it's also a different case. So, just a short side story. I call it normal form misery. So forget about it for a while, about the delay differential equations, and let us consider a general map on a complex plane, which can be written in this form. Expanded, so mu times z is the linear part, and can be expanded with respect to z and the conjugated. So these are coefficients. All the coefficients are depends on the parameter. And suppose that at the critical case, we have the complex imaginary unit here. So this is a Poincaré normal form that views nonlinear coordinate transformations, and this map can be transformed introducing new variables into a more simpler map. So we can simplify the form of this map. So the problem is how to compute C1 and C2 in terms of the original coefficients. So this is a much more simpler equation to deal with, but we have to compute what is C1, C2, how comes from the rows. So the C1 is this one. It is also appears in the non-resonant case, so don't care about it much. For the C2, in a paper I found this formula. So from the rows, if the rows are given, then C2 can be computed by this, in a paper of one. So in a paper of in the book of EOS, bifurcation of maps and applications, one finds your C2 appears only in the resonant case. In the non-resonant case, it can be. So we can get rid of the C2 also. In the resonant case, we cannot. So one can see it's a different one. So when I faced this situation, I had to compute it myself. So now everybody thinks there's a punchline coming. So the correct one is the third one. But anyway, so it's not my invention. It is presented, for example, in the book of Kuznetsov, Elements of Applied Bifurcation Theory, which I think may be the best monograph on bifurcations. So, but despite of this, this is presented in a well-known monograph. I found some papers in the literature when some people use the EOS kind of formula, which is not correct. So just miscalculation. Okay, I'm close to the end. Thank you. So, using our spectral projection method, so in the case of resonance, we have a bit more complicated normal form, but using the spectral projection method, the C1 and C2 can be computed in terms of the original equation. I omitted the formulas here, so just big formulas would be here. So, but like we can compute again everything, that is important. So, there is a so-called resonant bifurcation theorem which holds for maps, and by the projection method also holds for the time of a map of this. That means there are a lot of possible, this is a theorem of one and EOT anyway. So many possible outcomes. It's also possible that everything is the same if that coefficient is greater than zero that was defined earlier. Then we have it's not delta, so it doesn't matter. So A1 and A2, I forgot to define this one, so they are here. So there are a lot of possible incomes. It is possible that we don't have the invariant curve, but we have two families of four periodic points. It's also possible that they are on the same side, and at least one of them is unstable, and they are on the opposite side, and both of them are unstable. So there are many possible outcomes in case of resonant bifurcation. But again, for a given equation, I can determine which possibility occurs. So, for example, if a separable case, I call it separable case, if we have this resonant equation but just the periodic coefficient, then this simple condition, then we have always have the unique invariant curve. So then irregularity cannot happen if we have this separable case. And a simple condition decides whether it's subcritical or supercritical. An application of this is the right equation with periodic coefficients we have this bifurcation theorem similar to the well-known autonomous version. So finally, let me give you a geometric expression of this, all of this. If you consider the space C cross S1, S1 is just the standard unit circle. So the interval, I identify the two endpoints of the interval. So gamma 0, we have the time of map that maps solution from 0 segment to 1. So there is a correspondent invariant curve. But if I consider another map, so with the tau another phase, which maps a solution from tau to tau plus 1, it is not the same map. So for a given element of the phase space mapped into a different one by these two maps. So, but if I consider this time map and let the time go, if I to 0 to tau, then this is transforms into the other invariant curve, which is corresponds to the other time map, and so on. So we have a family of invariant curves for the family of time maps, and they forms in this space. You can think about it as torus. So in this space, we have the 0 t is a periodic solution instead of the 0 equilibrium, and this torus arises from this. So we can think about this. So this is just the formulation of the things I explained before. So, and we can formulate again our theorem in the term of the torus. So from the 0 t, there is a torus arises. Okay, some further questions. One interesting phenomenon in torus bifurcation is the Arnold tongs. That means that now consider a general torus, and we have a dynamical system on a torus, and we cut it and consider the time of a map, and the angular function is defined by this, and the rho is the rotation number. So if the rotation number is a rational number, it is unitly defined and independent on the choice of phi. If it is a rational number, then we have a so-called PQ cycle on the torus, at least one. That means it's a p periodic solution when it turns around q times on the other direction on the torus. So if now we know this is the complex plane and this is a typical path of the multiplier, then every rational point to every rational point attaching so-called Arnold tongue. This is like this and this from every rational point, and they have the property that if we are inside of such a tongue, then the rotation number of the torus must be this rational number. That means for a typical path of the multiplier, we cross many of these Arnold tongues. That means that the rotation number is always in change. So that means that periodic orbits typically long, because if I consider a typical irrational number, then the denominator is usually very big. So the typical behavior on the torus is if we change the parameter after the bifurcation point, then long periodic orbits rises and dies. And if we are in the intersection of the torus, of the tongues, then the torus cannot exist. So by this reason, we have no bifurcation, global bifurcation results, but I show you an example that even furthermore, I just projected to the plane a solution for more after a bifurcation point, and some regularity can be seen, but I'm very fast because it's the last slide. So what we have done is the case when the delay and the period is the same. If the ratio of this is n is still the same case, if it is a rational number, that is more difficult because we don't have a closed formula for the Floquet multipliers. And even it is possible that the delay and the period are irrational, and I don't know any results into this direction in the literature. So thank you very much for your attention. And anyway, just final remark, I think that the bifurcation, this kind of projection method can be applied in more general situations. If we have a dynamical system formulated in a Banach space and a periodic, I think this spectral projection method can be built up. I think if we can compute the eigenvalues explicitly, then everything can be done. So here are the references. Thank you very much.